Full of Sound and Fury is a podcast for adults, by adults, containing adult language. Listener discretion is advised. Previously on Full of Sound and Fury podcast.
I'm just talking to myself at this point. America! What are you doing? What are you out there doing, America, right now? We're deep in the middle of midnight here at the ATX. Lightning bolts striking all around. Madness. Like an old man talking to himself on a podcast. Just listen to my rantings. I couldn't whistle. That's all. I made myself laugh, America. Ha ha, very funny. I'm actually curious if Cyrus is just and see how long I can take this. Not very often. I get the whole podcast all to myself. I can talk about whatever I want. What would I talk about if I could talk about whatever I want? What would I talk about? I have no idea what I would talk about.
I'm back.
He's back, America.
Not sure what was just said in my absence.
feel free to use that however you wish.
Oh, was it spectacular?
No.
Okay. All right. So Daredevil.
Daredevil. Yes. Now there was a rumor that they were making a Punisher series.
That's been confirmed.
But I thought on the last podcast you told me that what turned out to be fake.
And you then, are referring to Moon Knight.
And then since,
that's another Keyshawn old man moment.
Oh, that's right. But I am getting a confirmed Punisher series now.
That is green lit, man.
Hot diggity shit.
Yep. Take that to
so,
the bank
have you
and
seen
smoke
a little
it.
Bit of things that are leaking out about Luke Cage?
No. But that has nothing to do with Daredevil.
No, it does. It does. They're all going to come together in a defense.
No. Future Keyshawn, come back.
I thought they're all going to come together in Defenders.
Yeah.
So they're related.
Yeah.
But they didn't have Luke Cage. Misty Knight's going to be in it.
Right. That well, she's an Iron Fist, right?
No, she's going to make an appearance in Luke Cage.
Oh, okay.
At least one of the pictures I saw. So I'm pumped for that. Daredevil, I have to say there's one criticism I have about Daredevil. And that's if you find an infinitely deep hole and then go, meh, and run off and do something else. I can't believe that somebody would do that. It's like they just had this hole. They find this hole, and then they just run off from it. And they don't even speak to it again. That was my only criticism of an otherwise perfect season of Daredevil.
My problem with the show was it was technical. In that with Charlie Cox trying to pretend he was American.
Yeah, that really bugged me.
And Elodie Young's utterly bizarre accent as well. Those two would often have scenes that were utterly impenetrable.
who's Elodie Young?
Elektra.
Oh, okay.
I was like, I do not know what's being said here.
Man, that's really funny. I don't. You know, I haven't picked up on it, and I think it's because I've never heard his normal voice.
Oh, it drives me batshit bonkers.
I know.
Because he clearly can't hold it. He's struggling with it.
That's so bizarre because I flat don't hear it, and I do consider myself a speaker of the English language, but I just don't pick it up.
Yeah.
But I know that I'm treading on thin ice because there's going to be a moment when I hear him speaking in his normal dialect, and then that'll probably ruin it for me.
Yeah,
because then I'll hear him doing English, and I'm like, oh, I know what Cyrus was saying. You know, it's kind of like once you go to a 4K TV, you know, then it's like, oh no, I ruined my 1080p.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've gotten very used to the idea that Hollywood has staffed its actor ranks with guys that are not Americans playing Americans. We've talked about this before, but Cox is just, for whatever reason, really struggling to pretend he's from, you know, the Bronx or wherever the hell Daredevil grew up. I forget now.
Yeah, well, it's a damn right certainty that he doesn't have any accent that sounds like he's from New York.
Yeah.
I mean, that's for damn sure. But the whole getting into a fight with a guy from the Bronx from Captain America Civil War in the little post-credit scene, that was a guy named Steve from the Bronx. That was awesome.
Brooklyn. Steve's from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. I'm sorry.
Keyshawn. Getting your boroughs crossed.
Yeah.
Spider-Man is from Queens.
There we go.
Steve Rogers is from Brooklyn. And Matthew, I think, is from Hell's Kitchen, which I guess is Manhattan proper.
No, I thought there was a different. I thought Hell's Kitchen represented a different. Again, we need Riyadh here.
Wabi actually would know this. In all seriousness, I will. I'm going to look it up. Where Siri? Where is Hell's Kitchen?
Hey, Siri, where is Hell's Kitchen? Hell's Kitchen, Manhattan.
Bam.
Also known as Clinton and Midtown West.
Yeah, I think I know why they renamed it. Yeah, okay. So he's on the island proper. Okay.
You nailed that. All right. Good job, Siri. You'll tell me again at about 3 a.m.
Yeah, a fitting start.
I know where Hell's Kitchen is.
I found 5. Hell's Kitchen's near you.
That's right. Would you like to eat at Hell's Kitchen?
Oh. All right, but yeah, to your earlier point, getting back to Daredevil Season 2, those fight scenes were fucking awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whew. Man. And oh, the scene in the diner. I mean, when I think of Season 2, that scene in the diner with Punisher and the girl, Karen Page, that scene just was perfect.
She was much better in Season 2. I have to say that just because I really took Deborah Ann Woll to task for how bad she was in Season 1. She was great in Season 2.
Yeah, she was... For me, passable in Season 1 and then just stepped it up higher in Season 2. And I love the hell out of it. You know, my wife is very squeamish. And
in what way?
Just blood, guts, and fighting. And boy, this show is – when Daredevil got going – not Daredevil, I'm sorry. When Punisher got going – he fucking got going on that show.
Oh yeah, but you know what? You'll enjoy this story. So we're watching this the double cross episode, right? Where Kingpin sets him up and locks him in there.
Uh huh.
And you know, my girlfriend Erin got really really. Oh no, Frank! And I was like, I pulled it out of the old. I went back to Watchmen, and I was like, no, you don't understand. They're locked up in there with him.
Yep. Yeah, I knew exactly.
He's totally fine.
Damn straight. And man, oh, yeah, that was
that sequence is a standout for me from Season 2 for sure.
But the fact that it was the character stuff was so good that
yes,
it doesn't get overwritten by all the hardcore nature of the violence. And so, you know, with that, my wife was as engaged with the show as possible, even with all that stuff, because the violence came from the characterization. And so it was just perfect.
I mean, it's probably the most humanized take on Frank Castle ever.
Yeah.
One of the triumphs of the series.
Yeah, I think so. I would say that.
So much so they felt like, well, I guess we're making a TV show about him now.
Yeah.
When we just made him too damn cool.
Oh, man. Did they ever. I'll watch the hell out of that guy, too.
Yeah, it was great.
I pray to God they just. I just finished reading Ennis's run on Punisher, and if you've never read that, have you ever read it?
Absolutely.
Oh God, I've never read it before. Oh, pray to God they make that. That just ought to be season one and two.
Well, they've already adapted some of that.
Where?
The Punisher film starring Thomas Jane takes elements from Ennis's run.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Spacker Dave, isn't it? The Russian.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to go see that movie.
I wouldn't go that far. So slow down there, cowboy.
Okay. Well, then maybe they can take it anyway if it wasn't done
yeah.
well.
Yeah. Good. Speaking of Ennis adaptations, since you gave us a natural segue, did you watch the Preacher premiere?
Oh, bo hell yeah.
Okay. So you liked it?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
All right. So I got to start watching that now then, huh?
Have you not seen it?
No, man. I didn't really enjoy the Preacher comic book series.
Oh, I enjoyed the hell out of that comic book.
Yeah. I believe you told me once before that I probably bailed on it too early.
I can't remember.
That after Gone to Texas, the first storyline, it gets pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's Ennis, so it's kind of, you know, he bounces around a bit. You know, there's an arc, but it bounces all over the place. And you wonder how is it going to pull it together. But it's, you know, his world building is so good. And just all of his runs. He does a good job of developing other characters. That's why I think everyone, you know, going back to what we were saying before about make your bad guys interesting too. And, you know, Ennis is good not just at making the bad guys interesting, but even the side characters. You know, they get stories. And,
yeah, I think that's what I don't like about him, though. I feel like they're all the same. That guy goes back to the same well a lot.
Yeah, I guess maybe I like the well. I don't know.
That's fair.
I don't know, man, because the boy sure is different from, say, Punisher. Now, the hyper
violence. It's really not.
Well, the hyper violence is there, but you're right. There's similarities in terms of the insanity of it.
Yeah.
You know, but I kind of like the insanity of it because no one else does it.
I mean, frankly, the Punisher is not much different from Hitman, which he did for DC in the early 90s.
True. Well, I don't know, man. That was a damn good series. Man, you're reaching into the well. That was a good series. But you're right. Yeah, yeah. They're all the big black haired brooding guy. You know, he kind of does have that person in his comics. But I don't know. I like the well.
That's fair. I mean, like, you know, like you can level that criticism at a lot of creators that they've got one thing they do really well.
Honestly, though, the Punisher fits that perfectly.
Right, and that's why he was a good choice for that series.
Has there ever been another movie that tapped into that kind of Ennis insanity like that? Punisher's the only one I can think of that would do it.
There was going to be, and then George Clooney read the book.
Oh no! Which one?
I swear to God, I've talked about this on the cast before, but I'll reiterate it because it's funny.
Boy,
George Clooney was attached to a Nick Fury film.
Really?
And at the time, Ennis was writing a very over the top but enjoyable Fury title for Marvel's Max line, 18 plus only.
Oh no!
And it was hardcore crazy, and Clooney writing it was like, what? Yeah, no. Count me out.
Oh, shit. Oh, man. That's too bad. I'm not sure that Fury fits in.
Yeah.
To that Ennis kind of insanity. But Punisher sure does. Okay, let's see. I'm trying to take stock of what we've talked about and what we've neglected to bring up.
Well, we got one more TV series to hit.
All right. Lay it on me.
The Thrones, baby.
Oh, shit. You had to go and say the Thrones.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Man, every time that I try and convince my parents to watch a show, I've talked about my father before and what he looks for in a television series.
Regular bowel movements.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. And
lots of fiber.
Right. Oh. So they came over for an impromptu visit, and we're not going to miss Game of Thrones. We're watching that shit. And so
oh, God, they came in cold?
They came in cold and hadn't seen anything. That's
fine. Oh, no.
I wasn't trying to sell them on the show. I've given up trying to sell them on things. But they came to watch it. And they're like, so this is that show you're saying is so good. Yes.
And the whole world is saying, by the way.
Right.
It is the biggest show in the world.
Right. But this happened to be the one where it was a very hard and fast edit to a misshapen warty cock. Remember that shot?
It says a lot about the show that I don't know which one you're referring to.
Arya was looking in the...
Okay, this is last week when she was casing the theater.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And the guy was showing his wang,
yeah.
And he was like, he had a wart on it or something, and was like, what is this?
Right.
And, of course, that's the one that my parents see. And they're just like, nope, we're out. That's it. They couldn't take
Well, thank God you didn't show them the baby getting eaten by dogs.
Well, I think that they probably would have done better with that one.
That also says nothing good about America.
That's probably true of all of America.
Yeah.
That's horrible. Oh, but this series is kicking ass. My God. Thank God. That this really was kind of a test to see if the writers could go beyond the books.
Yeah, the net's gone.
And I honest to God, feel like George R. R. Martin's going to have a hard time stepping up to this.
I agree completely. I'm glad you said it.
I think several of the beats are obviously coming from him.
Correct.
But
he's confirmed as much.
But, boy, he's going to have a tough time.
Do you know what it reminds me of?
I can't think of anything.
In television history? Once Lost figured out how long they were going to run.
Oh, and had an ending?
Yeah, once they were like, okay, you have this many episodes.
Right.
Like, it helped them refocus the back half of the series, and it got a lot better.
You're right.
It's very similar to that. They're like, okay, well, we have 2 years, and Martin has given us the broad strokes, but refuses to give us anything else.
right.
But the show has to go on because it is the biggest show in the world. So let's do this.
Yeah,
and it's been great. It's all wheat, no chaff.
And aren't we? We know they just got approved for a season 7, but that doesn't really tell us how many episodes are going to be in that season.
It's been 10 episodes every year. And right. HBO is pushing for more, but Benioff and Weiss to this point have been steadfast 7 years and we're out.
Yeah, well, I thought that there was a discussion about having less episodes per season and making it go like 7 and 8.
It's right, like and to this point, they're still pushing back against that.
Well, as long as I keep on getting this level of entertainment, I don't give a shit. I'm just
yeah, it's been a great series.
Yeah, I could watch it from the get-go again. Now, my problem is that my wife has gone nuts in reading all the books multiple times, and I have not read them multiple times, nor had the time to with all the comics that I read. And so I don't have as good a recollection, particularly of the last book. And I'm a little lost and confused as to how the last book, A Dance with Dragons, what from that has been playing, if there's anything left that's been unplumbed.
There is one storyline in the whole Five Nile series that we haven't seen yet. And what little we've seen of it suggests that they've changed it radically. And that is Sam's journey to Old Town to become a maester.
Ah.
That was in A Dance with, I'm sorry, actually A Feast with Crows, because Martin's a dumbass. But we haven't seen that, but we know from previews that he actually goes home with Gilly to his father's house.
Right.
First, and that's also wholly new, so.
Really? That didn't happen in the book. I'll be damned. See, I have some vague recollection of them traveling around.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of traveling around, especially in the last two novels, because the narrative has just been swallowed by the world that Martin wants Despot to tell us about.
Right.
But, I mean, there's whole storylines and characters coming out of those novels now.
Oh, and poor...
They just don't have room for them.
Poor Hodor.
Double trended on Twitter last Sunday night.
Man.
Game of Thrones / # hold the door.
He's just lucky that they didn't yell like, grab Bran and pull it.
I still think that one of the most brilliant things the show does is open with the map.
Yeah.
It really helps people like figure, you know, center themselves on what the hell's going on and where the shit stuff's going on.
Have you ever wondered, you know, they don't make much of a deal of it. In fact, I'm not sure that they've even mentioned it in the story proper about the meteor.
No, that was they went past that a long time ago.
Well, I mean, it's still part of the opening credits.
What meteor? Are you talking about the sun?
No, in the books, throughout the entire series of the books, there's a meteor going across the sky very slowly.
There is a comet that's seen in the second novel, A Clash of Kings. Yes.
I thought it was going across throughout all the books, but I could be wrong.
No, it's just the second novel.
And well, it's in the opening credits still. If you watch it, look.
I guess I haven't. I've never noticed it.
Yeah, it's when the ring is spinning. Mm. There's a part where they have the ring spin.
Sure.
And the meteor's there. Yeah. And I've always wondered what the hell the meteor has to do with anything.
It was, well, a lot of religious factions claimed it as a sign in that second novel.
Oh, okay. For some reason, it's been too long since I've read the book, so I was vaguely thinking that it's been lurking all along, going across the sky.
Yeah. But the narrative reveals in this season 6 have been awesome.
Ooh, boy. You know, it really felt like...
Payoff after payoff after payoff.
Right, exactly. Last season kind of drug it out, and then this season we're just getting exactly what you just said, payoff after payoff.
The sad thing is last season was such a boiled down essence of what the novel was. To me, I didn't notice it being drug out because I'd read the damn novel.
Ah.
Which was 3 times as long and 3 times less interesting.
Right.
I mean, there's literally a sequence in novels where Tyrion joins the circus.
Yeah. Yeah, and oh, it was horrible.
Yeah, and you'll notice they cut that because it's terrible.
Yeah. I'm ecstatic they skipped right over that. And I do love Jorah far more in the show than I do in the book.
Yeah.
And her telling him to go heal himself, that was pretty badass.
Yeah.
Tyrion doing what he's doing is real interesting. Mm-hmm. So, when are we going to... I mean, they resurrected Jon Snow.
Worst kept secret ever, yes.
Right. Now, surely he's got King's blood in him.
Are you familiar with R+L=J?
Yes.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's been getting so close to that, I would get real excited to see if they actually do it. What's the origination of that R+L=J?
R+L=J, and I'm throwing up the big-time spoiler alert right now for anyone who doesn't want to know. Although this is not actually a spoiler, it is conjecture. But it's a very popular theory. It concerns the idea that Game of Thrones / A Song of Ice and Fire, the series it's based upon, does have a central alpha protagonist despite having oodles of characters. And that alpha protagonist is Jon Snow. And it goes down to the, it comes down to the mystery of who, the identity of his mother. And R plus L equals J suggests that Jon Snow's parents are Lyanna Stark and Rhaegar Targaryen.
But
which makes Jon Snow the heirs to both the Old Kings in the North and the Targaryen dynasty.
How did the shorthand of R plus L equals J come about, though?
As people trying to, like, say it, not spoilery.
Ah.
R is Rhaegar, L is Lyanna, J is Jon Snow.
Okay, so it wasn't something like there was a tree that had a carving on it or something in the book.
That's different. R plus L equals J.
honest to God, that could be scratched on a tree somewhere in the book, and if you told me yes it was, I'd believe you. There's just so much material.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you think a child of 16 that gets assigned to do a book report about one of these books, or all of them, but I would assume just one, do you feel pity for that kid?
Hang on, let me check Snapchat and see what the kids are thinking. Oh, wait, I can't use it. I'm tipping them in old. Well, no 16-year-old is going to be allowed to read these novels.
What's that?
No 16-year-old is going to be allowed to read those novels.
Oh, that's true. They would be banned from Texas. Well, let's think they're in a progressive state where such things are, like, reading books are allowed.
Oh, that's a good point. I bet in Texas it is like the devil.
Yeah.
Jesus is not anywhere in those books.
Oh, no, he's not. Oh. I would feel bad for a kid that had to write a book report on this. I mean, seriously, if a kid, I'm going to write a book on Feast for Crows, and what do you say? It's a book that meandered from point A to point F. There wasn't any real...
I would go an opposite way. I think it would actually be easy because there's so much stuff there that you could, like, crap out of paper pretty easily.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I think you could take elements and crap out of paper about, you know, symbolism, blah, 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 whatever. But if you were to try and say what this book was, what the overarching plot of this book was to do, you know, I don't know that with A Dance of Dragons or with Feast of Crows, for that matter, that you'd be able to do much. Maybe if you put them both together, since that was technically how it was supposed to be originally.
There's a lot of him setting up the board, so to speak.
Right.
And I think maybe that's the thrust of your book, this hypothetical book report you're positing. It's like you talk about where you think he's going with it.
I guess so.
Like, for example, and I can say this without this, again, conjecture, not spoilers, I believe in the novel, I think Brienne Tarth is being set up to kill Jaime Lannister.
Wait a minute, I thought her and Jaime really liked each other.
Yes, and that's why he's going that route.
Oh, I thought they'd end up hooking up.
Nope. Jaime Lannister's deal has always been that he's been reviled for betraying his king, even though it was the right thing to do. He betrayed his ideals to do the right thing. With Brienne, I think she's going to honor her vows and do a terrible thing.
Oh.
She was charged by Catelyn Stark to kill him and bring him to justice.
Huh.
Even though he's not the man that, you know, she thinks he is, so to speak.
Huh.
Just my prediction. Throwing that out there.
Nice.
We'll see if it comes to fruition.
That'd be a shame. Yeah. I like Jaime Lannister.
Yeah. But this is A Song of Ice and Fire / Game of Thrones. All characters you'd like die.
That's true.
That's the moral of your book report.
As long as they don't kill off Arya or Tyrion. Those are the two. If they do that, I might be out.
No, Tyrion's such an insertion character. I think he's safe.
I hope so.
And you know, John,
are they developing Arya for?
That's the question, right?
I mean, to me, it feels like she is this show's Snake Eyes.
That's true in such a weird way of saying it. I love it. I like the idea that you're assembling a cast of Joes.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah.
From across the Seven Kingdoms. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
A girl has no voice.
Right, a girl has no voice. She has no face. If anything, they're putting her together to be the Wolverine, the Snake Eyes, you know, just the badass of the group. You know, that's how I feel it's going to come about. But I the part that.
But to what end?
Right, exactly. Right. It's, you know, right now she's kind of stuck off of. I mean, it's good.
It's a great question. Because they're doing it with two of the Stark kids.
Which one's the other one?
Bran.
Bran, I don't know what the fuck's going on with Bran. I mean, he's just been a MacGuffin for so long.
Yeah.
That I'm not sure, you know, what there, but Arya is going to. She disappeared as this little girl. It's going to come back as a force of fucking nature. And you want to talk about payoff. When they bring her back into the fold, and like her old, whatever sibling of hers ultimately sees her again, hopefully it's Sansa. I want Sansa to see what became of Arya Stark. And she's going to be a damn tornado of hell on whoever's still alive on her fucking list. I do think it's real interesting how she's found herself in a place that's going to teach her to be the ultimate badass, but she has to give up that list, you know?
Right.
And I'm curious how they're going to play that out. I'm hoping that it's in some way where she ultimately does get to be trained as the uber badass, and then she goes back to going after her list, and not just that her list gets her kicked out before she becomes a badass. That's what
I'm really curious to see where they go with that.
That's what I'm hoping for. But yeah, Preacher.
Speaking of things we weren't speaking about.
Yes, that's right. Preacher was great.
All right, that's good to know.
It was a very, very good start. Hey, look, there's Johnny Cash in it. At least
you know what? You can stop. I'm there. I'm in. You just sold it.
That was what did it. That's the moment that did it for me.
Yeah,
because I was like, they are putting the feel together. Now there is a little bit of crazy, you know. But so was the preacher was crazy.
Oh yeah, it was.
and they're going with it. I didn't think they were going to go with it. They've gone whole hog with it.
That's cool.
Yeah, I know. I really can't believe
it. Good on AMC.
I'm angry, though, that they can do it with Preacher, but Sandman still languishes out there.
Oh, God damn it.
Because if you can...
Not for much longer, man.
Fucking Preacher.
Someone's going to option that and make it just because they've got to.
That, and I want to see Transmetropolitan, the series.
Oh, it's called the 2016 American election.
No. We're only getting the bad side.
We're living it.
I want to see the interesting side. Where's my journalist?
That actually gives a shit, know what's going on? Yeah, if only.
I need journalism. I would do it.
Well, talk about that for a second, Key. I mean, does this does any of this crap happen if Jon Stewart doesn't leave The Daily Show?
Yeah.
You think so? You don't think he just eviscerates him on his show into nothingness?
All of them.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
I don't think it changes a fucking thing. I think it'd still be going. Yes, it'd still be happening.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't think it changes anything. Other than Jon Stewart probably would have had Bernie's movement going full force. I can't see him laying off on Clinton.
No, he would not, to his credit.
And, Republicans. Woo.
I know, right? It's just
man, it's
they're in a mess right now.
That's all a mess. It's just one big giant mess.
It's amazing how we got. it's like that line from the Two Towers. How did it come to this?
I just always wonder if, like, you know, is it me getting older and more savvy to all this, or is it truly getting worse? And
this can it be around, both?
Yeah.
I think it might be both.
It might be. I don't know. It's hard to differentiate.
Hi.
It's a constant exercise of, is this just me getting old and crotchety?
All right, well, that's sadness. Let's end it with some happiness here, because I'm dying to. Well, oh, actually, we have two things to hit. So let's
keep going. Do it.
Talk to me about Overwatch, the greatest game in the universe now.
Shit, that's all you had to say, man. That fucking game. Oh, it's like what's a good way to describe it? It's like chess. It's like StarCraft. That's what it's like. You know, with StarCraft, everything you do is kind of symbiotic with what the person opposing you is doing. And so you can't just say, I'm a guy that likes to build Zerg, and I'll build a billion Zerglings and Overlords and go to town. You can't just do that. You'll never win. You have to, like, get really good with all of the pieces, and so good that you can then see what the other guy's doing and accommodate it and try and beat it.
But it's a shooter.
Exactly. So now you've got a first-person shooter where you're playing the part of the pieces. And you're only one piece. And so you're in the battle. You've got to see, you know, who else is on your team, what they're doing with those pieces. And it's not so much that it's the shooting. I mean, obviously, that's a primary element, but it's really not the part that's so engaging with the game. The game, of course, it's a first-person shooter. You're shooting. That's standard with all the games, you know. But it's the counter that really is what makes this thing unique, layered with a Pixar-level brilliance as far as the storyline. I'd go watch an Overwatch movie tonight if they made one.
That's the part that I've been fascinated about. I've come to discover that there's like an actual narrative here, not just interesting characters and a shooter.
Oh, and how they're building the narrative is amazing.
So are there featurettes that come out sporadically? Or?
Well,
okay.
I think there's been four of them so far.
Okay.
And they're about 7 minutes long each. And it's not like they move, you know, some of the featurettes move the ball a lot. Some of them just introduce little things. When you're playing the game, when two characters come together at certain times, they'll say something to each other, but it'll be just something like, what the hell's he talking about? You know, you didn't make him say that, and the person you're standing next to didn't make the character say that. They just say it. And you're like, what was that? And I mean, I've been playing it quite a bit since the closed beta, and you just, these little things are still evolving where little things pop out, and you're getting like a brush strokes of this huge narrative that some Overwatch was formed to fight off these giant, I guess, alien villains or something like that, and then they did, and then the world turned on Overwatch, and then some bad shit happened, and they're all spread out, and they're no longer part of Overwatch, and there's all this background with every single character, and huge stories with each character, and some characters you find out are related, and others, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff, and all of this with, you know, a shooter. What is in essence a shooter, but it's so much more than that, and the design, the artist in you ought to just eat this shit up, you know. The same feeling, I get the same feeling from the design of this that I got seeing The Incredibles.
Okay.
You know, that kind of nouveau, you remember Darwin Cook, who just passed away?
Oh yeah, we're gonna have a long in memoriam section on this podcast, aren't we, tonight?
Yeah, right.
So everybody died while we were away.
Right, so New Frontier, Darwin Cook's New Frontier, that style.
Very Silver Age-y.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of the style that you get with all of these. With The Incredibles, you get that feeling. And with Overwatch, you get that feeling. And so The game itself has mechanics that are just a blast. Just every character you can play a different way, and there's literally, like, I don't know how many characters, 15 or something like that.
I actually looked this up. I thought it was like 30 something.
No, not yet. They have talked about the future characters. And more.
I see. Okay.
But it started really limited. Then they added several more towards the end of the beta.
Are we? Ask Siri. Siri will know.
She's gonna tell me at 4 a.m. How many characters are in Overwatch?
I'm not sure I understand.
Because you didn't let me finish.
Come on, Kanye.
I'm gonna look up Kanye. Hang on. Look up Kanye. No. Stop. No. Kanye.
Sorry, I didn't get that.
Good, you whore. I forgot the question.
How many characters are in Overwatch?
I forgot the question.
How many characters are in Overwatch?
Let me check that.
Oh,
okay.
Here we go.
I found this.
16.
Bam.
Booyah. Yeah, so there's 16.
All right,
characters.
So you wrangled that over eventually. That's good.
Yeah, and they each character has 3 or 4 different actions that they can do. Some of them they can do repeatedly. Some of them they can spam real fast.
Right. It's very League of Legends.
Yeah. And
but it's a shooter.
Oh, and it's just insane. And they've got healers. And it's not – don't let me lead you astray. Many folks seem to think that it's just another skin of Team Fortress 2. It is not. It is way...
No. Let me assure you, I have not heard anything negative about this game.
Oh, man.
I haven't seen a response like this since League/the first Batman Arkham Asylum game.
Oh, boy, is this game good.
It is beloved, and I wanted to understand it.
Yeah, well, it really is. You know, every character, you know, they are undefeatable except for where they're defeatable. And it's like figuring out, oh, okay, hey, this girl's shot passes through that guy's shield. Or, you know, even ones that you're like, this one's lame. How in the hell could anybody use, I can't remember her name. She's an Egyptian woman that she's essentially can create shields. You think, well, what good is she? Well, she can do 2 things. She can create teleporters, and she has these little balls that she can stick on a wall. And they just shoot laser beams just like a turret almost. They're not strong, you know, by themselves, but you put 3 or 4 or 5 of them up around in a small enclosed room, and you can and then you run around and just entice people to follow you and trying to kill you, and they run into that room and die. And, you know, then you have shields and teleporters, and, you know, teleporting is the name of the game because otherwise you have to run to get to a location. So even she has unique capabilities that, you know, when you got her on your squad, then it's just badass.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty cool.
There's one character that's kind of your normal, there's some intro. The real neat thing are the articles that are out there trying to introduce people to Overwatch and explain it to them. And you can tell a lot of these people played in the beta and are now trying to explain it to the broader world. Of like, hey, you can't just treat this like a normal shooter and just run in there and do what you're doing. There's a strategy in what you've got to do. And
right. I mean, I'm assuming in multiplayer, the components of your team and using your stacking your various abilities for maximum effect is the name of the game.
Yeah, and the interesting part is when that team setup is going on, there's a little bit of a chess match just on everybody as they're picking their characters. Some go in and go, boom, I'm this one. Well, then everybody else is looking at it and going, okay, well, this will supplement that. And I just shorted out on Blizzard. Blizzard invented a little program that essentially looks at what the team makeup is and says, hey, you don't have a sniper, you don't have a tank, or you don't have a medic or healer.
Sure.
You know, it tells you. So that way you can kind of, oh, I need to fill that role. But you do that, and then sometimes you'll come up against a team that's like, there's this one character, he's a Russian. He's this enormous tank, and he can help create this giant shield. and the whole team were all that one guy. And they just clumped together and put the shields around them in 360 degrees and just moved along in a giant huddle. And people couldn't figure out how to beat it. Just, you see some crazy shit like that. You know, just where people come up with bizarre strategies. And there's this one little cunt.
dropping the C-bomb.
I'm telling you, she's 4 foot tall. And you, hey, I'll tell you what it's like. You know when you're playing other first-person shooters and people have map hacks and wall hacks and things like that? You know, cheats, essentially.
Sure, for bastards, yeah.
Yeah, bastards, exactly. Well, Blizzard owns it. Because what they did was they took all those kind of cheats and essentially made those powers for the various characters. And so this one little bitch, she's 4 foot tall, and she's dressed as an Eskimo. And she's got a cold gun like Mr. Freeze. It's not just that it freezes you. First, it slows you down. And you want to shoot her so bad. But when she shows up, it's just all holy hell breaks loose. People trying to get away from her. Because she'll slow you down and you're like moving through molasses trying to turn and shoot her. And usually right about the moment your reticle gets on her face is when you freeze solid. And then she shoots you in the face and kills you. And you gotta find, and then you gotta either become a sniper or beg and plead somebody to be a sniper to shoot that bitch in the face from a mile away. Because if you get close, you're toast. And it's just, there's 15 other characters like that, that at any given moment in time, you could go, fuck this one. So right now, there's a lot of current hate. Excuse me. There's a lot of hate out there for the robot. There's a robot that I'm forgetting his name right now.
No, I hate that you don't know the names because I wanted to know who I should be drawing for fan art.
Tracer. That's who you need to draw for the fan art. She's the front end of the whole damn thing.
Okay.
And she's also downright brilliant. You need to watch the original trailer for Overwatch and then all the subsequent
Okay. And where would I find that? For me and the audience here.
Oh man. I'll post it on Twitter and say
no, ask Siri.
Oh shit.
I kinda want a whole podcast that just you talking to your phone now.
I bet you too. Siri, can I see the Overwatch original trailer?
Interesting question.
Bitch! I wasn't done. Interesting question. Hang on.
I'm going to let you finish.
Show me the Overwatch. No, stop.
That may be beyond my abilities at the moment.
Oh, you bitch. Show me the original Overwatch trailer.
Let me check on that. Which one?
Oh, so it gave me a list. It gave me a list, none of which are what
are the original trailer.
Men and Chicken.
Chicken or Men and Chicken?
Men and Chicken. The Hateful Eight. I don't think what I said sounds anything like Men and Chicken or The Hateful Eight.
Oh, but it's okay. We have our episode title now.
What?
It took a couple hours, but we got there.
Men and Chicken? Damn it, Siri. Oh.
So, but to bring it back to something that's worthwhile, do I go to Blizzard.com?
That might have it. I think.
Or maybe just Google Overwatch trailer.
I would Google the original Overwatch trailer because there's a Overwatch cinematic trailer. Yeah.
Okay. Now, if I want to see Men and Chicken, where do I see that at?
I have no idea. Ask your local Siri. Say I want to see something awesome. And then she's going to throw Men and Chicken at you. That's all you got to do. So, yes, if you haven't seen any of that stuff, I wish I could be there when you saw it. Because it is shit hot. The artistic style, all of it.
Is that the best movie of 2016 so far?
it's certainly the best game.
Oh, yeah. No question. I'll be. I mean, I...
Damn.
We're 6 months out from my the end of the year awards, and Overwatch is locked in.
Oh well, I will say I haven't played Doom yet, and
yeah, and I'm sure it's fine and good and all, but
Yeah, all I understand is that they've really just done, you know, there's something to be said for just because they made a whole bunch of arcade shooters back in the late 90s and early 2000s, mm-hmm. then it kind of went away and you get third-person shooters, things like that. You know, you can still go back every once in a while and make one with updated graphics and updated features and, and I'm glad they did because those are fun games to play. And
oh, yeah, it sounds like a really well-made throwback
game. Exactly. And I think they ought
to Overwatch, to hear you talk about it, is actually innovative. It's carrying the genre forward.
It is. It really is. I will say that if you end up playing it, there's a guy called Soldier 76. He's kind of your standard, what everybody is used to in a third-person shooter. Or not a third-person shooter, I'm sorry, first-person shooter. He's kind of the standard, and he's a good way of dipping.
I want to play a third-person shooter. I don't know what the hell that would be.
That's where I shoot myself. Oh, that's another part of Overwatch. Each character has like an Uber that they can lay out. When they do, right before they actually perform it, they'll yell something out, and each of them have their own phrase. And it is hysterical because, like, there's a cowboy called McCree who has essentially just a six shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll say, "It's high noon." And boy, everybody will just run like bastards to get away because basically anyone on his screen gets shot in the head and dies immediately. And, so you'll hear it's high noon and everybody runs for their lives. Or, you know, there's this little Japanese girl that rides inside of a 12-foot tall robot that can unleash hell. And she giggles around the entire time. And then she'll say something like, "Chew on this." And she turns that robot into a giant bomb that can blow up everything within, you know, 50 feet radius. And, again, can do all sorts of crazy shit. Oh, and I didn't even mention the giant monkey.
What's a giant monkey? You didn't leave with that? Come on, man.
Man, Overwatch has a giant gorilla named Winston. And Winston's the genius. He's kind of like a beast of the group.
Okay.
And, oh, my God, is it fun being that goddamn monkey. Let me tell you. He's got a leap where he can leap like several hundred feet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can just unleash havoc when everybody set up their defense, and then this monkey comes flying over all of it. It just starts bashing in a whomping every last living thing inside. Beautiful. If I sit here and think about it, I remember some of the other characters. Bastion, that's the name of the robot. There's a lot of hate going around for Bastion right now because he's essentially a mobile turret. So if you've played Team Fortress, you know what a turret is.
Sure.
He's a mobile turret is what he is. So he can run around as a robot, then he transforms into a turret. And you can imagine the kind of hatred that people have for that turret. Now, the trick is there's ways you can destroy it, and you just have to be the right combo to get it.
So okay, how do you win a match?
Most all the matches are objective-based. So there's certain pieces. So like the first part is you have to get and hold an objective. The other team's got to defend it. And there's usually a square area that you're trying to get to. Then once you do that, it unlocks a mobile objective that you've got to be near for it to move. So when you're near it, then it moves. You're trying to get it all through several locations to a final resting spot. And so it's kind of a mobile battle as you go. And and of course, if you're not next to it and the defending team is next to it, then it moves backwards. So they can actually drive it backwards to a certain extent. And so a lot of objective-based fighting and stuff like that. It makes you, rather than a death match where everybody's just kind of running around trying to kill somebody, that wouldn't really work with this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of it's a constant battle. I mean, I'll tell you, last night I was in one match that was like they held the thing. You have to get it to 100, and they held it for 99, and we were like at 20. And we overtook it and came back and won 100 to 99. And, man, people were just cheering on the computer. Oh, my God! You know, so a lot of excitement with those objective-based battles like that.
Cool.
And also, I didn't mention, part of the chess match is that you can change your character on the fly. So you can go in and you go, oh, this isn't working. Look what they're doing. So the next time you spawn, you can hit a button and then select one of the other characters.
Oh.
So it's not like you're married into it from the beginning. It's a evolution. So the other team will change. Your team will change as you go. You're like, son of a gun, we need X. You know, so you'll switch to X. And then
interesting.
You switch. So
that's a big deal wrinkle right there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, once you realize it, I was playing with some guys tonight who were really good, but they only owned it for like a day. And they thought, because the maps were so complex, that they were procedurally generated maps. And I was going to explain to them, no, they're actually the same map. But that's how the map, you know, you can imagine the guys that designed StarCraft are very, very good at every little detail of a construction of a map. And their maps are just a thing of wonder, just amazing, the little subtleties to it. I've been playing this thing for 6 months with 1 month off, and, man, it's just been a blast. Still finding stuff.
Wow.
So I know.
Are you on console, PC? How are you playing it?
I'm playing it on PC.
Okay.
The easiest, for me, the easiest way to go.
Yeah, I mean, been playing it that way for 20 years, right?
Well, that and, you know, there's not everybody has an Xbox or not everybody has a PS4, but everybody has a computer. So
is that true anymore?
Well, you've got a computer.
I do, but as we've established, we're old men.
That's true. I'm not looking to play with the kids.
I mean, we're still on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, I still think, you know, part of the appeal to me is Steam and Battle.net, because really over the last year I've really, this is going to sound dumb, but it's been kind of an epiphany for me that, hey, you know, with Steam, no matter what computer I have, I'll always be able to play my old games.
Sure.
And buying them over Steam and being able to re-download them and stuff like that, I love that. I can still do that. Versus an Xbox where – now, I know that they're talking about the next Xboxes. Microsoft's trying to get it to where people are going to buy consoles like they buy phones, where the software is not just backwards compatible but forwards compatible. So if you buy a game and then the next console you buy, you'll still be able to play that game. That's a big deal. That'll be – awesome when they do that.
Isn't the PlayStation already like that?
No, not so much. You get the PS4, you can't play the PS3 games. And the original
PS4, really? I thought that was one of the draws. I thought with the PS2, for example, you could play the PS1.
The PS2 could play the PS1. The first iteration of the PS3 that I have could play the PS2.
Oh, so they stopped doing it, is what you're telling me.
They stopped.
Oh, that's douchey.
Right. And the Xbox, they stopped, but then they slowly are bringing with the Xbox One, are doing back. They only started backwards compatibility about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, the library is growing as far as what they're doing. But what Microsoft has come out and said is that eventually they're planning to kind of change the way. And in fact, I think there's a discussion on this on Penny Arcade today. I think Jerry's news article on Penny Arcade is talking just about this, I think.
Okay.
That might be where I read this.
I know that the NX is coming out too, and that's going to be fairly transformative, at least they hope so too, from Nintendo. So.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that. I'll wait and see.
There's still a lot of secrecy about what it's actually going to be, but.
Right. I'm more excited, unless it tends – let me start over. Unless it turns out that the NX can play 4K content, then I'm more looking forward to the next iteration of the PS4. Because they've got a new PS4 coming out that's going to have 4K capabilities.
So Sony's basically copying the Apple model. So it's so much that, well, there's not it's a PlayStation 4S, for example.
Yeah. And that's what Microsoft is trying to do, too, is eventually get kind of that Apple-type model where they're...
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. You're right. I'm just... You a few weeks ago, there's a spot here in Seattle where there's an Apple store in the university district, and right across from it in the shopping center is a Windows store, you know, one of these things where Microsoft is trying to be Apple. And the differences between the two are so stark and comically sad that it's just...
Well, you know...
I mean, that Apple is, like, bustling, and there's just nobody in that Windows store except for employees and a couple people deciding if the Surface Pro is worth $2,000.
Right.
Spoiler alert, it's not.
I still think Apple's eventually going to fall apart.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think that Apple, their big model, and what you made me think that when you said that Sony was going after the Apple model, is like, well, not really, because Apple, the best thing that they could do is spot a opening in the market. So, you know, they did iTunes, and I say it was Steve Jobs that could spot the opening in the market, and he saw the opening with the phone. And so they did that. But if you look at the last 3 or 4 years, what happened with the original computer, you know, they are the ones that innovated the mouse and the user interface with the computer. And then Windows came along later, and it took them a long time to catch up with the manufacturing and everything. But once they did, they passed them, and Windows became the standard for everything. Sure, there's still Apple computers, but they're not they're Apple's computers.
That's not exactly correct history there.
Which part's wrong?
Microsoft overtook Apple because initially they gave away DOS.
Right.
They created their own market with which to exploit.
Yes. But
it's one of the most genius things I think I've ever seen in business.
I guess the thing is that Microsoft basically created a simpler replication of what Apple was doing and made it more open source than Apple's closed architecture.
Right.
And to me, that's what really set Microsoft off as far as being more successful in the large picture with their PC market. But then Apple turned and went to the phone market. And now you see where Apple's iPhones aren't necessarily in any regard that much more technically sophisticated than the best Android phones. I'd say the Android phones are cheaper and can do more. And they're open as opposed to iPhone's closed architecture. Same story.
I'm going to steal this description of the Apple model from someone else, but Apple computer makes technology for people that don't like technology. I think that's a pretty powerful branding philosophy, and one that I don't think is going to go away anytime soon. Now, there will always be a market for what you're describing. You know, back in the 20th century, it was Microsoft, and right now it's Google, for people that do like tech and want the best, shiniest, most customizable thing. So they're always going to have a strong competitor as a result of that.
I would say that market that Apple builds for, which you're right, because that's why my parents love Apple computers and Apple software, is smaller than the overall broad market. Now, right now, iPhone...
It absolutely is.
But
that market's never going to go away.
No, it's never going to go away. I'm just saying that I think when everybody catches up, and they're catching up quick, unless somebody at Apple spots the next market, and I don't think they are. I think there's actually others that are doing that now, like Google and Amazon, with things about the home network and that market, VR, those areas.
Right.
Apple's not innovating there. And the whole story of Apple...
That does feel like a mistake.
Yeah. And
because VR, I think, is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah, I think Apple has... And I'm looking at it more in terms of like an investor, that Apple's big sell to their shareholders was that they could go and innovate and then establish the development over in Japan or China or wherever they would, where they would have the manufacturers locked into contracts for years, and they'd be so far ahead that there wasn't any other, when the other folks caught up, it took them years just to get the manufacturing in line. So the iPhone came out. Well, shoot, they had all the manufacturers that could create the iPhone locked up into contracts for.
Oh, but they didn't though, Key.
What's that?
They didn't though. Samsung basically just stole all the shit and made so much money that they could afford to settle out of. Basically say, yeah, we stole this patent. We're going to pay you off, and it's still going to make monetary sense for us.
I hear you, but I think that the reason why they did that is because that they had the manufacturers years before the other places could catch up, and just in terms of developing the manufacturers to create those products. You're absolutely right. They stole, on both sides, pilfered material and eventually sued each other and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, Apple's their shtick is identifying that market and trying to corner it before everybody else even knows that it's there. And I don't think they're doing that anymore. So yeah, I'm not saying they're going to go away.
You might be right. Your VR example is a powerful one, because that one is the next big step forward for people that need tech but don't necessarily like it.
Yeah,
and creating a reality where they can just, a computer essentially that just functions like a second reality is totally the next evolution of that market.
Yeah.
And it does seem odd that they're not going that way.
Right, and I think they've already missed it.
Yeah, and they've never had a competitor that's tried to beat them at that game.
They have never even competed in that game.
Yeah,
and the closest they get is their Apple TV, where they're trying to get a foothold in your living room. And I think they're already too little too late. You got Roku that's far.
I'm told that thing's a piece of shit, actually, the Apple TV.
Right, it is. But that's their best foot forward into that simple, how are we going to reach into people's living rooms? Now, Microsoft has been saying since the very first day of the very first Xbox that that's what they were shooting for. In fact, they kind of strove too far with the Xbox One. And got a lot of gamers pissed off at them. But inevitably, even with those market corrections, they're still heading towards a home center. And what I read, I thought it was a Penny Arcade, but that Microsoft is working towards the next iteration of the Xbox that's going to have VR capabilities. And so
that's probable. I know Jerry Holkins in particular has been very excited about VR.
Oh yeah, I am too, but not enough to spend, the $1,500 to $2,000 it takes to get you skin in the game right now. I'm gonna wait until.
Oh yeah, well, listen, just like Samsung did with the iPhone, just probably just a couple of quarters. Once we have the initial stuff, someone's gonna have a much cheaper market entry version of it.
Yeah, I can't.
It's coming.
What surprised me is I really thought the Oculus Rift was going to be the end-all, be-all, but it turns out that Facebook and the Oculus really locked down their – they went the closed system route.
Oh.
And so the HTC Vive, with its open system, has actually been like the runaway success so far.
This is App Store versus Google Play all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that just blew me away, because if you had me betting money going into it, I would have bet on Oculus. And I'm not saying that on the long run, with Facebook backing it, that they might not correct it. But so far, they haven't corrected it. And that HTC Vive, man, people are just going nuts for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would.
And that thing is relatively affordable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but you still have to The main problem I see is you have to have one souped-up processor and a pretty good graphics card just to meet the bare minimum specs.
I would imagine.
The upgrade to that, most folks with the processor that's needed, you're going to have to buy a new motherboard. If you're buying a new motherboard, you're buying a new graphics card, and you're buying a new processor, shoot, man, that's $1,300 right there just to meet the bare minimum specs.
Right.
And so then another $600 on top for the actual device. And so you're talking $2,000 entry point. And to me, that was just too steep for the first generation. And particularly when I hear these little rumblings about the consoles getting in on it. Because I do think that, with that, the tech demos I've seen. Have you seen those tech demos from Microsoft using VR in the living room?
Have you seen? I've played a Rift game.
Yeah, but did you see the? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where, like, let's say you put on a headset, but you've got glasses that you can still see the room you're in. And then you, like, look at a blank wall and you can see a window from your computer. You can grab it and put it up on the wall. You could stretch it and make it big and watch a movie on it. You can turn and look at a table that doesn't have anything on it in the real world, but it has, like, a beach and a calendar. Or you can have a fake puppy that runs around on your living room floor that you can see through the VR. Have you seen any of that stuff?
No.
Oh, man. You need to go. That
sounds like real Iron Man tech, though.
Exactly. But they're doing it, and it really exists. And they're mm-hmm. showing it, like, live tech demos on stage. So they're showing it to folks. And I'm like, between that and them talking about the evolution of the Xbox to tie in with VR, I'm sitting there going, well, unless PlayStation can be the other one, I don't know that anybody else has as good a foothold in the living room already as Microsoft does.
Sony's a pretty big player. You're probably right there.
Yeah, but Sony has their own VR that they're pushing. And so far, from what I understand, it's a distant third place behind the Oculus and the HTC Vive.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the HTC Vive, the thing that's appealing to me about that is that it's tied in with Steam. And so there's open everything there.
Yeah, yeah. We'll
create shit left and right for that.
That's exciting times, man.
Oh, man, you need to see some of those videos, and you'll just be sitting there going, I can't believe I live long enough to see that, because it's just crazy watching it. You can tell. I mean, eventually, you can see it just on a live tech demo where it's like, hell, people aren't going to paint the inside of their houses anymore, because you'll be able to say, I want that wall to be blue. You'll just wear these glasses, and your wall look blue. Seriously, and your wife will have
it. I don't want to clean. I'm just going to put this helmet on that makes me suggest that the house is clean.
Right.
Oh, that's a slippery slope I don't feel good about.
Well, what was it? Wasn't it Ready Player One where they have to, like, force themselves to exercise so they can use the thing?
Yeah.
I think it's exactly where it's heading, which ultimately leads you to –
to Wally.
Wally. Yes, exactly. That's my mind. Wally.
Fat people in floaty chairs.
Yeah, but think about it. Everybody could be married to Cheryl Teagues, you know? Now, I purposely picked an old one there. That was on purpose.
No, that's fine. Classic. The word's classic.
I could have said Emily Ratajkowski. How do you say her name?
Ratajkowski.
Oh, I nearly had it. I gave up on it. I should have stuck with it.
Yeah. I had it holstered, evidently.
Oh, man, I'm proud of it. I'm proud of it. It's right there. Well, man, we have covered the geek gamut tonight, my friend.
We have. We hit everything.
Yeah, now –
a couple things I didn't think we were going to. That's good.
Well, let's see. The In Memoriam.
Oh, right. You got to pour one out for Prince.
Damn straight we do.
Oh, man.
I know.
Were you a big Prince guy?
Yes.
I was not. So you take this point.
Well, his pop stuff was obviously huge for the world.
Mm-hmm.
But what was really amazing about him was, I mean, first of all, he was like a musical savant. He could play anything. And he was good at it.
Which I did not know until he passed.
And when you I posted, you're not on Facebook, but,
not yet. I'm going to fix that.
Well, there's a video that's out there where Prince is playing with Tom Petty and several other famous musicians at a function in memory of some other passed away musician who passed away recently. And essentially they're all great guitarists that are up on stage and they're playing. And, you know, they each just tear it up. And
oh my God, is this the Dirty Mac version 2.0 we posited before?
What?
Was this Dirty Mac 2.0, basically?
No.
That would have been awesome.
No. No, this was just a big jam that a bunch of famous guitarists were playing at.
And all right,
Prince took the final one. And when he gets up there, my God, he plays so amazing that all the rest of them are just grinning and staring at him. And he's looking back with a smirk on his face, and he's killing it. And you're what? And you just, he was incredible guitar player, just an incredible guitar player. But he could then, you know, a lot of, all of his music was him doing all of it. He'd do the drums, he'd do the bass, he would do all the elements. He'd play every bit of it. And it's just incredible how good a musician he was, just without even getting into the songs that he created. Just his capability was amazing. And there's this old quote that was floating around, but I'd heard it before he passed, that I think it was on the radio or it was MTV or something, asked Eric Clapton, what's it like to be the, you know, now that Stevie Ray Vaughan had passed, what's it like to be the greatest guitarist on the planet? And Eric Clapton's answer was, I don't know, ask Prince.
Yeah, I think I heard that story somewhere else.
That's some high fucking praise right there.
Yeah.
Because I think Clapton's one of the greatest guitarists I've ever seen.
Yeah, his particular brand of pop, for some reason, never resonated with me, and I've been struggling to figure this out since he passed, but I do find myself listening to like his songs ever since this went down. I've been like, that's actually a pretty good song. I did not appreciate that like I should have.
Well, man, you can find some of his not popular stuff that wasn't the pop stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that son of a bitch could play.
Yeah.
And where I think you really heard it was like hearing him live. Because he would, particularly after he got away from, what was the record company deal he had forever? Then he changed his name to The Symbol.
Right. Which surprisingly, a lot of people don't know that's why he did it. A lot of people think he was just him being eccentric.
Which is awesome. I mean, that's
kind of, right.
To create something like that. Well, he did it, but
it was a contract dispute.
Yeah, that was really it, and he couldn't. You could tell. So the fact that all of that. You know, when he got away from it, he started doing like covers of other people's music and things like that. And man, he could just kick ass. And it was neat after he passed hearing in Austin. Boy, there was just a steady stream of Austin musicians that were coming on the radio giving interviews about what their experiences with Prince was like. And 201, they were talking about how the sucker just could play and play and play, and people would be like ready to pass out and give up, and he'd be coming back at 3 a.m. going, hey, we got another set, let's go out there, you four guys, let's go play something. And they're like, we don't know that song. Oh, you can figure it out. And they'd be just covering songs and playing. And apparently he did a whole lot of that out at Paisley Park. Is that the name of the place where he lived? Paisley Ranch, Paisley Studios, something like that.
Where you live? I don't know. Theory. Where does Keyshawn live?
No, not me. Where Prince lived.
Oh, I don't know.
I think it was Paisley. Hang on.
Paisley? That sounds like Prince.
Son of a bitch. A prince is a ruler. Son of a bitch. A prince is a ruler. Son of a bitch. A prince. It's just, well, I never. Did you hear that shit? Hang on. Hello there, bitch. Hang on.
She's sass mouthing you.
She is. Get that. Oh, I'm gonna bleep that out. God damn it. Sorry, Keyshawn. Note that one in the record. Alright, hang on, here we go. What was I gonna ask? Oh, that's right. Where did he live? Where did Prince live? I swear to Christ. She's gonna say Minnesota. A prince is a male ruler, monarch.
Lake Minnetonka.
Shit.
Wales.
Where did Prince the singer live?
There you go, pop star.
Okay, give me a moment. Here's what I found on the web for where did Prince the singer live. Radio Auster.
Radio Auster. Because you said he's a pop star. That translated to...
Radio Lobster?
Radio Lobster. That was a song. Radio Lobster!
Rock Lobster, dude. Come on.
I know, I'm joking. It was close enough.
Good enough.
Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
Lake Minnetonka. Son of a bitch. Nope, I'm not going to have any luck. Maybe death. Maybe he'll say where he died. Because that's what he was. There's some exciting podcasting going on right here.
That's fine. This is what editing is for.
All I ever wanted to know about opioids. Son of a bitch. No, I can't find it. Fuck it. It's Paisley Ranch or Paisley Park. There it is. All it takes is you to give up, and then you can find it. Just have despair in your soul. That's all it takes. Paisley Park. Anyway, I'll send you a video of him just absolutely destroying a stage. And my favorite part of the video is when he's done playing. I mean, he fucking killed it. And when he's done, the crowd goes nuts. He throws his guitar straight up in the air. Just right off. He's like, it's got a strap around his neck, and he's playing it. And then he's done, and he just heaves it.
It's just dead to him.
Yeah. You know what? Motherfucker never came back down. The guitar, literally, I think God reached down and grabbed the guitar.
Oh, that's a great Prince story. I want to go out on that.
Yeah, it never landed.
He's like Washington. He threw a knife into heaven.
Yes. I'm going to post this. I'm going to send it to you just as soon as we get off the air here.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm going to have a grand email for you because I'm going to get all the links to these videos you need to watch.
Well, I got to post the episode so you can remember what the hell you're supposed to do.
Okay.
You got to listen to this again. Wait, what was I supposed to send? Shit, I didn't write it down.
Oh, shit.
I can't ask Siri.
John's old man moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been probably two episodes of Full of Sound and Fury podcast by the time I get done editing it.
Right.
With me tonight? As always, has been Keyshawn Xavier from Austin, Texas.
Oh, bo hell yeah.
I've been Cyrus Morzavi of Kirkland, Washington. You can follow me at risingproductions.tumblr.com. But in the meantime, you can see me live and in person June 3rd through 5th at ACON in Dallas, Texas. I'll be at the Artist Alley at table G20.
G20!
Right. Like a G6, but not.
Represent!
Oh, man, I got a hype man. I love it.
Yeah!
This episode and previous episodes can be listened to at fullofsoundandfury.com or via subscription and or streaming to iTunes and or SoundCloud.
And or streaming, motherfucker!
This has been a Rise Again production, copyright 2016.
Copyright!